3. Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Biha Guri. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Biha Guri. Janabarava Idivaru Jaru Bude Janabarava Idivaru Jaru Bude Rajajano Ranjavuso Yasodhanandana Rajajano Ranjavuso Yamuna Teva Mana Chanti Yamuna Tera Vana Chalane Tera Satashi Shimad, His Divine Grace Avaya, Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Gijai, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Gijai. Anandakoti Vaishnavrindagijaya Namacharya Shidahoidas Thakutgijaya Param Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Garadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindagijaya Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopakapata Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijaya Vrindavadam Kijai, Maturadam Kijai, Navadeepdam Kijai, Jagadasami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Shimadakalasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Go. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 3rd chapter, text 32. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atvata param na param api Anejat, ejat, cha, kinchet, avyatariktam, vasti, vidya, kalas, te, tanavash, cha, sarva, hiranyagarbho, asi, Brihat, Tri Prishtaha, Tvata Param Na Param Apyanejad, Etat Shakinjad Yatiritamasti, Vijakalaste Tanavascha Sarva, Hiranyagarbho si brahatri prishtaha Tvata param na param apyane jat Ejat shakinchid vyatiritam asti Vidya kalaste tanavascha sarva Hiranyagarbho si brahatri prishtaha Vata param patna param apyane jat Ejat shakinchid vyatiriktam asti Vidya kalaste tanavascha sarva Hiranyagarbho si brahatri prishtaha Okay.
Vata param na param apyane jat
Vata param na param apyane jat
Ejat cha kinchi
What's that? No, I got that.
Vyatiritam asti Vidyakalastetanavyascha sarva
Vidyakalastetanavyascha sarva
Hiranyagarbho si brihatri prishtha
Hiranyagarbho si brihatri prishtha
Vyatiritam asti
Vidyakalastetanavyascha sarva
ladies. Swataha from you. Param higher. Na not. Aparam lower. Api even. Anejat not moving. Ejat moving. Cha and. Kinchit, anything. Vyatariktam, separate. Asti, there is. Vidyaha, knowledge. Kalaha, its parts. Te, of you. Tanavaha, features of the body. Cha, and. Sarvaha, all. Aranyagarbha, the one who keeps the universe within his abdomen. Asi, you are. Brihat, greater than the greatest. Triprishtha, transcendental to the three modes of material nature. Okay. Translation. There's nothing separate from you, whether it be better or lower, stationary or moving. The knowledge derived from the Vedic literatures, like the Upanishads, and from all the sublimbs of the original Vedic knowledge, form your external body. You are Hiranyagarbha, the reservoir of the universe. But nonetheless, being situated as the supreme controller, you are transcendental to the material world, which consists of the three modes of material nature. So, you can repeat. There is nothing separate from you, whether it be better or lower, stationary or moving. The knowledge derived from the Vedic literatures, like the Upanishads, and from all the sublimbs of the original Vedic knowledge, form your external body. You are Hiranyagarbha, the reservoir of the universe. But nonetheless, being situated as the supreme controller, you are transcendental to the material world, which consists of the three modes of material nature. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The word param means the supreme cause, and aparam means the effect. The supreme cause is the supreme personality of Godhead, and the effect is material nature. The living entities, both moving and non-moving, are controlled by the Vedic instructions in art and science, and therefore they are all expansions of the external energy of the supreme personality of Godhead, who is the center as the super soul. The Brahmandas, the universes, exist during the duration of a breath of the Supreme Lord, Yashaika nishpasati kalam atavalam prabhya jivanti loma vilaja jagananda nata. Thus they are also within the womb of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu. Nothing therefore is separate from the Supreme Lord. This is the philosophy of Achincha Veda, well, Veda Tattva. So, Fatva param na param apyane jare tatcha kinchid vyatiriktamasti vidya kalaste tanavascha sarva hiranyagarbho sivrahatripashtaha. So, Omaganat timirandasya garanjana shalakaya chakshur and miritam yena tuzmai shikadave namaha. So, it's very interesting in this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You're actually listening to Hiranyakashipu's prayers. And there's two problems here in this prayer, and there's actually a good quality in the prayer. The two problems are, one problem, of course, that he's thinking that Lord Brahma is God. He's the original Hindu. just like in you know, people ask, what is Hinduism? Sometimes people say, what is Hinduism? And then my reply is, I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows. Because it's a variety of different beliefs. Everything from monism, you know, where you just think that you're God, I'm God, we're all God, thank God. And then everything from there to the tantric beliefs, you know, witchcraft. You know, tantric, of course, means... Actually, we can describe what tantra is. There's left-handed tantra and right-handed tantra. Left-handed tantra is what you usually think of in terms of tantric beliefs. And they have their regulative principles, too. They have five regulative principles, which we call the five M's. One of them is meat, you know, mangsa. Another one is fish, matsya. And then... they have to take intoxication. Maitunya, they have to have illicit sex of the worst type. And finally, mudra, they have to make these, just like in Krishna consciousness, we have Hare Krishna, we have these mudras, you know, for worshipping the deities, you matcha, kurma, things like that. And they also have their obscene mudras. I think you understand what I mean, without demonstrating it. That's interesting. That's another branch of Hinduism where they do that and they curse people. Just like we were just staying at someone's house and they were cursed and there were all sorts of ghosts around there haunting us all night long. Happens. That's called tantric. And then there's also right-handed tantric, which is like Narada Pancharatra and other things that are injunctions in the Vedic literatures. And there's people who worship different demigods. There's people who worship nature itself. There's people who worship Krishna. There's people who worship Vishnu. So under the guise or the heading of Hinduism, you have all these different categories. It's pretty amazing. And actually, the word Hinduism was never in the Vedic literatures. No part of the Vedic literatures has Hinduism in it. It was a geographical designation for those who lived on the other side of the Indus River. They were called Sindhus, and later became, they couldn't pronounce the S properly, so they said Shindus, Shmindus, Hindus, whatever. It became Hindus after some point. And it was never used up until the last century, in the 1900s, that is, as an internal designation. Internal designation means people would call themselves Hindus. Previous to that, was the Muslims were calling people who were whatever, not Muslims, they were calling them Hindus. That's it. You can actually define Hinduism by basically what it's not. It's not Christianity, it's not Judaism, it's not the Muslim religion, it's not Zoroastrianism, it's not the Sikh religion, everything else is Hinduism. So it's easier to define by a negative definition. So, anyway, so one branch of Hinduism, they worship various demigods, and generally in the Hindu temples, they have all or many of the demigods. Actually, there's 33 million demigods, and that would be a big temple to have 33 million demigods in, wouldn't it? Can you imagine a Maha temple? bigger than our temple of Vedic planetarium in Mayapur. So, but in most of the Hindu temples, they have the primary personalities. They just want to make sure they don't miss anybody. Because basically they are worshiping either out of fear or out of greed. That's the second problem here with Hiranyakashipu. What I mean by fear? By fear, I mean they think that if they don't worship the demigod, then something really bad is going to happen. Just like in Fiji, for example, we have a lot of people worship demigods. And we have two or three devotees here from Fiji. And generally, when their children join the Krishna consciousness movement, they tell their children, excuse me, they tell their children that the children are going to have something unfortunate happen to them because they've stopped worshiping the demigods. And so what happens is, you know, eventually everybody gets a cold or the flu or has something happen to the body. I mean, that's the nature of the material world. So then when someone does get sick, the parents say, see, I told you so. You didn't worship Ganesh, you didn't worship this demigod, you didn't worship that demigod, and demigods are punishing you. I mean, it's even when I was young, and of course I wasn't born in a Hindu family, in case any of you can't figure that out. Whenever anything happened to me, my mother would say, God is punishing you for not listening to me. Does anyone else have that experience? You know, you should listen to me. God wants you to always listen to me. So, and that's the same thing basically in Hinduism, because the priests, unless you give a donation to them, and they raid the hundi box on a regular basis, unless you give a donation to them, then they say that, you know, you'll be cursed. Anyone's gone to Braj in the Vrindavan area, and if you don't give a donation to the pandit, they curse you sometimes until you have to come up with not enough money to pay them. One time I was doing Radhakund Parikrama, and the pandit was just harassing us, and I just said, how much money do I have to pay you to stay away from me? And he said, 100 rupees. And so I paid him 100 rupees. And then I went to Shamakund, and he was doing the same thing, and he said, well, it's 100 rupees for Radhakund and 100 rupees for Shamakund. So it was just like double the price. So anyway, so that's one reason why people worship the demigods, because it's just like fear in case, you know, they don't do it. You know, they're very fearful what's going to happen. Of course, we understand, according to the instructions given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the example where Krishna encouraged the residents of Vrindavan not to worship Indra, but to worship Govardhan instead, that Krishna protects the devotees. You know, Krishna does say things like, aham tvam sarvape papebhyo moksha yashami masucha. He says that those who worship the demigods, it's a vidhi purvakam, not the recommended method. So, you know, Krishna's very, very specific about this worship of the demigods. However, there's another side to that too, that one can pay respects to the demigods because the demigods are servants of Krishna. You know, sometimes devotees go too far in the other direction and they say, you know, we're not interested in Lord Shiva, we're not interested in this personality, and they offend these personalities. Because you see, even Nanda Maharaj, he worshipped Lord Shiva on Shivaratri as a devotee. Lord Shiva is the Vaishnavadam, Itashambhu, and certainly Ganesh is a devotee. It's described in the Brahma Samhita that he holds the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord on his tumuli, on his head, basically. So there's nothing wrong with understanding their devotees. But if you think they're God or gods or whatever, then you're in Maya at that particular point. So, therefore, we have the proper attitude towards the demigods. In fact, at one point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes the offense on chanting as not only thinking the demigods to be equal to or independent of Lord Vishnu, or the holy name of Lord Vishnu, but actually disrespecting the demigods. So there has to be a balance there. So, anyway, so in the Hindu centers, they have all these different demigods, and they even have Krishna there, too. And there's a story Prabhupada told, and I'm sure most of you have heard this story, that there was one English gentleman who was able to figure out which one was God because he looked at the altar and he saw that all the demigods, they were doing work, but Krishna was playing a flute with his girlfriend. So in this way, he knew that Krishna was God. It's pretty easy to figure that out. So that's one problem with Hiranyakashipu's prayers here, that he's actually thinking Lord Brahma is supreme. And the second problem is that he's just a thief. Like Prabhupada said, too much devotion is the sign of a thief. Like if you go into a store and the salesman is very devoted to you, you know, somehow or other it always happens like that, especially the car salesman, right? They remember your name from 30 years ago. You know, if I go into an automobile dealership, they remember my name. Hey, Mr. Swami. They say, how are you in the Swami family? I said, I'm a sannyasi. So in other words, that's what's happening here. Lord Brahma has absolutely, Hiranyakashipu has absolutely no devotion for Lord Brahma. I guarantee that. But he's just being nice to him, praising him, to get what he wants out of Lord Brahma. You know, so obviously, this is his trickery to get what he wants. And so he's offering prayers. But there's actually a good point about these prayers here, which Srila Prabhupada deals with a good point in the purport rather than criticizing poor little Hiranyakashipu. He talks about how this is related with Krishna, that indirectly the goddess of learning is enabling Hiranyakashipu to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the goddess of learning does this quite often. When one, you see in Krishna's pastime, sometimes someone tries to blaspheme Krishna and it turns out to be a praise for the Supreme Personality of God, because the goddess, there's different ways of understanding the Sanskrit words that are being used. So here, Hiranyakashipu is actually saying something that's really bona fide when it's applied to Krishna. He's saying that Krishna is the supreme cause and the effect of everything. So let's try to understand what that means, how that applies to us, because this is a very important philosophical point. Supreme cause and effect of everything means, basically, to put it in common language, that Krishna, not a blade of grass, moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And how that applies to us is that everything we come across, that everything we cannot control, is being directed by Krishna and Krishna's energy. Krishna's energy is directed by Krishna. So therefore, when a devotee, especially a devotee who is not under the jurisdiction of material energy, maybe we're influenced by it, but we're not under the jurisdiction, when something happens to us, it's Krishna's arrangement. I mean, things happen to us that are sometimes a little unpleasant. I mean, look at the case of Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti was subjected to so many miseries. I mean, it's hard to elaborate or count all the miseries, you know, the attempts on her son's life, the attempt on her life, the banishing, the taking her daughter-in-law and trying to disrobe her daughter-in-law in front of the whole assembly. So it's a pretty miserable situation. And so you look at that and you actually may discourage you from devotional service. You say, Queen Kunti, she's a great devotee. Look what she had to go through. And you see other great devotees too going through so much pain and tribulation. And you think, you know, why should I worship Krishna? It's better to worship Lord Shiva. Because it's said, you know, the devotees of Lord Shiva become very opulent, right? So let's just become all Shiva bhaktas. So we can become very opulent. And the devotees of Lord Krishna, they're, you know, tend to have a lot of troubles. So, you know, what is it? What's going on here? And the question is raised, in the Bhagavatam too, in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, that you see Lord Shiva, he's undergoing austerity, but his devotees are just like super wealthy. And Krishna is undergoing enjoyment, and his devotees are generally troubled. So, you know, what's happening here? You know, we want to worship a God that's going to give us enjoyment. So, the point is that Krishna arranges things for his devotees because in the material world, we're in a disease condition. And disease condition means you have to have some restrictions in order to get over that disease. Just like if you have any disease, let's say you have a liver disease, you better not be eating fried foods. You know, you got to renounce certain things. If you have diabetes, you know, you better, because people don't do that. Nowadays, they just want to take a pill. In the same way, people, at least in my generation, everyone wanted to take a pill for spiritual life. You know, they called LSD, you know, what was it? Allen Ginsberg said it was God for our generation or something like that. Can you imagine that? And Prabhupada, of course, said it was an illusion within an illusion. In other words, you're already an illusion, and then you put yourself in more illusion by taking LSD or smoking whatever you're going to smoke. And so, in other words, if you're sick, it requires some hard work to overcome your sickness, especially if you have to go through physical rehabilitation. Let's say you have an operation or something, you replace your knee, replace your hip, replace your brain, whatever. And then... then you have to go through a period of rehabilitation, you know, which is painful. It's extremely painful. So right now, we're in a disease condition because we're in an insane condition. Just like sometimes we criticize people who have depression or schizophrenia, things like that. But we're just as bad. You know, we're thinking, identifying with this body. That's crazy. Like Prabhupada said, who is crazy? We're crazy. You know, like that. I'm thinking, when will breakfast be so I can enjoy my tongue? So, let's get Bhagavatam class over as soon as possible. So, that's crazy. It's insanity. Identifying as something, like if you go in the mental institution, sometimes people think that they're Napoleon. You see this, they have their hand in their jacket like this, and a Napoleon. Some people think they're God, and we think we're the body. So, we're crazy. So it requires, the doctor has to give us some proper prescription. Krishna is the doctor, of course, and the spiritual master. And first of all, they give us the sadhana process, you know, vaidhi sadhana in the beginning, because we don't have a taste. You know, what in spiritual life is like poison in the beginning. Later on it becomes nectar. I guess most of us are still waiting for the nectar part. But in the beginning, it's just like, it's struggle. You know, you got to wake up early, you got to chant your rounds, you got to do this, that. And you can't do what you like to do, unless you could sneak and do it without any devotee watching you. But you don't realize the super soul is watching you the whole time. Krishna. It's confirmed. That's all right. It's part of life. I just hope no one calls me on my phone for the sake of it. But one time I was giving class and someone called on my phone while I was giving class, and it was very embarrassing. So the super soul is in everyone's heart. Hridesha Arjuna Tishtati. Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yantra Rudani Maya. Super soul is in everyone's heart, so he's watching everything you do. And basically, he's also the doctor. The spiritual master is a doctor. The super soul is a doctor. And he subjects you to so many challenges in life to teach you actually, first of all, there's no enjoyment in this material world, and secondly, how to take shelter of him even while within this material world. So basically, whatever happens to you outside of your ability, I have to be careful, because you can't just blame your own foolishness on Krishna's mercy. That, like, there was devotees, they were driving a car and they fell asleep and some devotees died, and they said to Prabhupada, this is Krishna's mercy, and Prabhupada said, no, it's not Krishna's mercy, it's their foolishness. And they just have to take another birth again. So, something within our control, and there are things within our control we can't blame Krishna for, but outside of that, things happen. Things happen. I was remarking as we were driving, I was driving with some devotees yesterday in Brisbane, how when you actually become a devotee, Krishna just moves you around on the chessboard You understand? Like there's a chessboard, and Krishna moves you like one of the pieces on a chessboard, saying, you go here, you go there. And I was remarking how I never had plans to go to Fiji. Now I'm the GBC, you know, I'm entangled completely in Fiji. But I never had plans. And then Krishna somehow or other just, you know, I get a call from Tamal Krishnamurti one day. And he says, I want you to go to Fiji to straighten out some legal situation. All right, so I go there. And I say to him after my visit, oh, it's very nice, they have nice prasadam, he said. And then he says, now I want you to become GBC there. No plans. I didn't plan it at all. And I said, of course, the prasadam is very nice there. And he says, you will taste the politics too, how nice they are. And those are from Fiji, understand what I'm talking about. And I'm not talking about governmental politics, I'm talking about devotee politics. So, and then, you know, Krishna makes plan, and I'd never planned to come here to Australia. And somehow or other, I'm here. You know, I don't know how I got here, other than an airplane. But it's just like, and then you just, when you become a devotee, you actually put your life in Krishna's hands, and he just keeps moving you around. And the more surrendered you are, the more you don't complain when he does it. You know, then, and then Krishna does things like he removes you from your body. Like that. I was remembering the departure of my dear godbrother Bhaktatirtha Maharaj, that he was in his final days. And he had a dream, and in that dream, Tamal Krishnamurti came to him, and he said, you know, you have to go. Prabhupada wants you to serve somewhere else. And I think it was Bhaktatirtha Maharaj said, but what about all my disciples, people depending? And Tamal Krishnamurti said in this dream, yes, and I also had to go through this too, but now it's time to go. So in other words, that's a devotee's surrender. Not only does he see Krishna in everything, but he actually goes on serving Krishna enthusiastically, accepting the Lord's arrangements, not blaming the immediate cause for a particular problem. That's brought out in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where you have Dharma the bull being beaten by the personality of Kali, three legs are cut off, and he's asked by Parikshit Maharaj, who has done this to you? And Dharma the bull is not pointing out that it's Kali. He doesn't say it's Kali, you know, go kill him. He says it's very difficult to ascertain. In other words, he points out ultimately that it's the Supreme Lord doing these things. And Prabhupada says in the purport that if one blames the immediate perpetrator for a particular act, he's just as culpable for that act as the perpetrator. In other words, if you get angry at someone, consider someone to be your enemy because they said some harsh words to you, they did some politics against you, or whatever, then you get the same reaction that that person does, according to Prabhupada. It's interesting, isn't it? Because you're seeing atheistically. You're seeing that there's no God in control. So that's the whole point of this particular purport and verse, that Krishna is in charge of everything, and if you think that something moves without the jurisdiction or approval of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are in Maya, and you're probably an atheist too. Or at least you have some atheistic tendencies. So we should see like that. Krishna is everywhere, in everything. And of course, as Prabhupada points out, that's the Achincha, Veda Tattva philosophy, that Krishna is one and different from everything, simultaneously, inconceivably. And if we keep that in mind, then we'll always be surrendering to Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, understanding the Lord is always taking care of you, protecting you, and maintaining you, which are two of the surrendering principles taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I think we could take questions now. Any questions? You know, I spoke about a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
That they think that Brahma is actually talking about Krishna, the Supreme Person.
That Rani got the clue, yeah.
Krishna, and suddenly, I mean, I had to clarify, you know, this, it was who wrote the Akashic Reviews, you think Brahma
was the Supreme Lord, yeah.
And, you know, especially also the super soul in the heart, you know?
Yeah.
Understand the reason, all these demigods are actually
right.
Yes, equal, you know? And so it just seems that it's not really explained very clearly sometimes. Mm.
Yeah, well, you have to really understand the context. Context means you have to understand where this particular verse is, and in each individual purport, it doesn't explain that. But one really should read the whole chapter so they understand what's going on. But yeah, you can be confused by this. But actually, he is praying to Krishna because the goddess of learning, Saraswati, is actually causing him to offer a prayer to Krishna, but he's not understanding it's to Krishna. So it's quite an interesting thing that the goddess of learning, even when people blaspheme Krishna, and there's several instances, I mean, with Shishupal and other personalities, that the goddess of learning turns these blasphemies around and makes them praise of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like if you say that, sometimes it says in Sanskrit, Yadama, that Krishna is the lowest. But then you can turn that Sanskrit around to mean Krishna makes everyone else go down. So that's happening too. So it's important to explain these things in the context, these particular explanations in the context. But it's easy to get confused. I mean, if you see a great personality, I mean, even on the Earth planet, you have some people with mystic powers that people think that they're God. And people were so crazy that I remember during the 1960s, people thought that some person from Korea was God. I mean, imagine that. I mean, it's bad enough we have gods coming from India, but then they're coming from Korea too. People were so bewildered. And then, of course, there was a recent god who passed away in India who had a lot of hair on his head. I'm not going to mention his name. It's not so pious. But he was able to do some little tricks. Actually, one of our devotees visited him and went into his room, took darshan of him, and went to his closet. And he saw all the hidden pockets in his vestments, you know, in his clothes. And he understood that. And he saw little ladies outside making the packets of vibhutis, I mean, the things he was giving out. So he saw he was just a cheap magician. But people accept things just based upon sentiment. That someone is God. I mean, there's so many instances. In the 1960s, there was another person from India who was God. He was 16 years old. You know, just like Krishna's old, he's 16. So he was 16 years old, and his followers thought he was God. Then he ran away with his secretary, and you know, people gradually realized that, you know, God shouldn't be running away with his secretary. And his mother took him to court in India saying, "This son is not God. I want my other son declared God." So, you know, people are basically extremely foolish to accept. I mean, Prabhupada said we accept the scientist as God, basically. Not in the same sense, but as being able to give us what we may consider the absolute truth. And then they're changing their theories every few weeks or months, and then we still have faith in them. So Krishna says in the Gita that when one desires to devote himself to one particular deity, he makes the person's faith strong. So that's really what's happening. You know, that if you really want to worship Satya Sai Bhoga or something, then Krishna will make your faith strong in that particular individual. And I actually in Fiji I interact with a lot of these people who believe a particular individual is God, and they have great faith. That's because as the super soul, Krishna is fulfilling the desire of everyone. So, any other questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, when you mentioned about taking intoxication,
yeah.
That is an illusion within an illusion.
Yes.
I'm rather intrigued because I've observed and heard about people who have taken certain types of intoxication give you different sort of
variety.
Experiences. And their minds have become very sharp, and and they've been able to understand things that in a so-called normal state they couldn't just get it, they couldn't understand. And I knew one person who just prior to becoming a devotee, and did become a very good devotee actually, that he said to me, when I took some intoxication, then I got it, then I understood. And people become very creative also. So I'm not advocating this at all.
Sounds like it.
I've just simply intrigued at how it enhanced the understanding. And,
well, not to propagate that particular philosophy, but generally in the 1960s, let's go back to the 1960s, because that's my era, that people were taking intoxication because they were looking for something else. In other words, there was a certain segment of the population that actually were open to new experiences. And that openness, it's not the intoxication made them open, but they were open to doing things like taking intoxication. They weren't taking intoxication simply because they wanted to get intoxicated, but they wanted to experience different things, find out about different aspects of consciousness. In other words, there were many books that were published, like Huxley's The Doors of Perception. I don't know if anyone read any of these books, but this is, you know, old type stuff. And so those individuals, because of their openness, not because of the intoxications, it's a really interesting point, but there's some connection with the intoxication, because those are the people who are willing to experiment, and then they became devotees. But it's not the intoxication. People can say it's because of the intoxication I joined the Hare Krishna movement. In certain cases, they were so intoxicated they stumbled in the door of the temple and they woke up the next morning in Mangalarti. I mean, that happened all the time in San Francisco, which in this place called Haight Ashbury, which is two streets, you know, that was like the hippie capital, and we had our temple right there. So, you know, you'd see people and you just pull them in the temple, shave them up, and the next morning they come up with a bald head. And they're dancing and chanting because they're open. In other words, the intoxication also makes people more open to different experiences, but it doesn't give one more spiritual intelligence. Not that I took intoxication, so I'm not speaking firsthand about these things. I mean, I couldn't even take the taste of wine. I thought it was obnoxious. Krishna protected me. But I saw this with many of my friends, that it just made them more open to more experiences, and then ultimately we took advantage of that and brought them into Krishna consciousness. Just like if people are attached to their tongue, that's not Krishna consciousness, but we can utilize that to trick them by giving them prasadam, by making them devotees. So, we can, like Prabhupada even utilized that trick. In one particular poster it said, stay high forever. You know, because people were into staying high, so we said stay high forever, so we sort of tricked them in that way. So, you know, Krishna can use that as a trick. But if you would come in contact with these people who have taken long-term intoxication like this, Timothy Leary or other people from the 1960s, you would see that they're extremely brain damaged. And, I studied all that when I was young. In fact, there were books. You know, there was one book I read, you know, Be Here Now. I mean, some of you may remember that book from the 1960s. You know, that was my genre or people that I associated with. So I'm quite aware of how and why they approached Krishna consciousness. But I cannot say it was because they were taking intoxication. I would just say that there was some connection between their openness and taking Krishna consciousness. Do you understand the logic? I'm not being causal, you know. That causal means intoxication, because of intoxication, they took up Krishna consciousness. I'm saying that people who are open were more likely to take intoxication, and they were more likely to join Krishna consciousness. So there's not a causal connection. Sometimes when you have two things taken at once, you tend to assume a causal connection between them. Does everyone understand what I'm talking about? But it's not necessarily causal. It's just that two things happen at once. It's not that the hippies caused Krishna consciousness, although the hippies and the beginning of Christian consciousness in the West happened simultaneously, it's not that one was the cause of the other. Although, people being hippies, they were naturally more open and to different extent, and they were rejecting society. Okay, it's an interesting question. So, they'll be selling herbal medicine outside. For those who want to become Krishna conscious after class. But you know, there was one, I mean, I just have to tell this story. There was one follower of Timothy Leary, who was one of the drug people in the 60s and 70s. And he was a prominent member of the Krishna conscious movement. And he started to propagate the philosophy that you can chant better if you smoke marijuana and you take this LSD. And there were even like tapes of him chanting under the influence. And his followers used to play these things and say, oh, he's in so much ecstasy. Just hear this tape. You know, it was going all around ISKCON. But he was under the, and then eventually he left ISKCON, fell down, and one of his foolish disciples that followed him ended up cutting his head off and putting it on his lap. So that was the punishment he got for propagating this intoxication within the Krishna consciousness movement. So we have to be careful. Prabhupada did, it is Prabhupada's words where he said, it's an illusion within an illusion. I didn't make up those words. Because it puts you in another illusion. Because you're simply changing the chemical balance of the body. And how is that going to make you understand you're not the body? It just doesn't work like that. I mean, logically, it doesn't compute in my brain. I mean, you can take some medicines that help you think better, sure. There's no problem with that. If you have some problem, you know, some psychological disease, and you need to take something to keep yourself from seeing all the visions you've been having. I mean, I have people in the temple, you know, they had hallucinations. They saw people that didn't exist. So they took the medicine and they didn't see those people anymore. Because when they did exist, I just told them to preach to them, so. Well, yes.
My question comes from this discussion, then, if there was a convergence there with the hippies and the Hare Krishnas,
yeah,
and Prabhupada appearing, what about today? I mean, where do you see the mentality of young and say, spiritual, you know, they're somewhat seekers today? What is the avenue that we can come and match them like Prabhupada matched the hippie?
Okay, you're asking a good question. You're asking a Krishna West question in there.
I've got a t-shirt on today.
Really? So that's a Krishna West question. So you have to understand, when you're addressing a particular customer, you have to package the product according to their needs and desires. So what do people like nowadays? So people are not very open to just like dressing anywhere, having flowers in their hair. I've very rarely seen a man with flowers in his hair nowadays. And whatever. I mean, hippies, like Prabhupada was asked, what is a hippie? And Prabhupada said, you know, something wonderful. So that was Prabhupada's reply. So you don't see many of those people just... And the hippies also were actually, in general, very educated people who were just rejecting the society of their parents. There was the war going on, the Vietnam War going on, and there were so many things in the society. But these were not just bums on the street. I mean, I wasn't one of the bums on the street. But anyway, we were basically looking for something higher in life. Nowadays, many of the old hippies have become, I guess, yuppies or whatever they call them now, generation whatevers. And people are not of that same mentality. But what are people looking for now? That's the question. You know, what can we offer people now? What we can offer people now is something that they have a great lack of in modern society, particularly because of the technology, which is loving relationships, which is really interesting. Like, if I look at the religions that are growing very quickly, then there is one common denominator to all of them, that they are very loving, even in an open, you know, external sense, with new people themselves. I mean, you go to a Christian church on Sunday, and after the service, everyone's shaking hands, embracing each other. Not the men and women, obviously, but they're, you know, shaking hands. I went to a Mormon service, just to see what's happening. And they were so hospitable to me that, you know, I've never been received so nicely in a Hare Krishna temple before. Even as a sannyasi guru, you know, it's just like, they said, oh, what's your name? Swami. Oh, Swami, thank you for coming. You know, they didn't bathe my feet, but, you know, they embraced me. Oh, it's so nice. Have you met Swami? He's great. Wow. Thank you for coming. And I said, wow, maybe I should become a Mormon. The philosophy, you know, I couldn't relate to it, but it was, you know, and they give support to their young people. They send them to university, pay for the university, arrange for the, nice marriages, financial success, everything like that. And so people have different needs. Somehow or other, we may be still preaching the way we did in the 1960s, at least in the Western world. Now, there's different customers. I mean, let's approach this from a marketing standpoint. Like in Fiji, for example, you have to market Krishna consciousness differently than you would in here in Australia, isn't it? It's just different. There's different customers. So, you know, in Fiji, you can do it in a more traditional way. You don't say be high forever in Fiji either. You say, you know, take kava and be happy. It's interesting, in Fiji, in all the Ram temples, Ram Mandalis, they all take this kava drink and get completely intoxicated after. That's their hippie version of Ram Kata. Anyway, so instead, you know, in Fiji we offer them nice prasadam, you know, heavy kirtans. Some of them are so loud I just can't bear it. But, you know, that's the way the culture is. So here in the Western world, the big lack is like loving relationships. You know, people are on their computers all day long. Facebook, it substitutes for their loving relationships. They text their wife from another room in the house when they want something to eat. People don't... Isn't it? I mean, it happens all the time. And then people don't sit down and eat with their families anymore. And the two, mother and father, are both working, so they don't see the child until they go to the child's marriage. You know, so you know, if we want to be successful, we present Krishna consciousness in that way that we can deal with people's needs both materially and spiritually. I mean, it's a very practical thing. You know, people. You know, I was thinking about my guide brother Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and you know how he would sign all of his letters? Does anyone know? He said love, with love, you know. And I, you know, when he first started doing that, I said, what's going on here? You know, sannyasi is supposed to love, you know, I just, you know, whatever. But then I understood that that's really what he was feeling and what people need. They need these, to feel they're cared for. I mean, I the last few days, and Shingananda remembers this, I've been giving the example that it took me 2 more years to join the Krishna Conscious Movement because I didn't feel any love from the devotees. The first time I walked into the temple, I was told I was going to hell. Might as well have been a Christian church. You know, they told me, you know, Kali Yuga's coming, you're going to be living underground, eating human flesh, be short as a dwarf. So you better shave up right now. Shave all those golden locks off your head, you know, and wear bed sheets, and learn how to use a toilet without a toilet seat, and without toilet paper, you know. So there were many challenges. So I said, the hell with you, you know, I'm out of here. So it took me meeting Prabhupada, and really what impressed me about Prabhupada was his compassionate. You know, when I met Prabhupada, I said, you know, I want to be like him. I didn't think I wanted to be like any of the other people. I want to be like that. Yeah. I want to be like him. He's my role model. Because people have role models. That's another point. You know, you really want to be like that person. And so that Prabhupada, that's how my focus. I want to serve him and I want to be like him. Not, you know, prominent like him, but, you know, his qualities. I really admire that. And especially, you know, his compassion. He was the first person I met in my life who had unconditional love for me and all living entities. So, I mean, of course, he didn't express it like embracing me at first or anything, but it was, you could experience that being with Prabhupada. And so, therefore, I joined. And that's a big need nowadays. It's always a need. but especially nowadays. People are not that much philosophically inclined. You know, you don't find a lot of people looking for the absolute truth right now. You know, that, like Krishna says, four types of people become to Krishna consciousness, those who are looking for wealth. Generally in Australia, they don't come to our movement looking for wealth. those are in distress, you know, they're in such illusion, they don't think they're in distress anymore. You know, those are inquisitive, yeah, some people come because they're inquisitive, and those are looking for knowledge. So basically, the distress that people are feeling is the lack of human relationships nowadays. And actually, I have a whole chapter in my new book about this. So, does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am.
And also, you know, package Krishna consciousness so it's not too shocking for people. You know, the externals, like, there's also a Krishna West thing, that the externals, like, you know, people maybe get too shocked with devotees in the West. Because, and so sometimes we go out, you know, wearing Western clothes. None of us wear karmic clothes. Because karmic, how are clothes karmic? They make me karmis, I mean. Isn't that, it's interesting. This is my karmic clothes. These are my devotional clothes. No, you don't, it's like changing your uniforms like Superman or something like that. You know, you have to go into a phone booth, you know. I don't know, have you seen Superman? You know what I'm talking about? He used to change in a phone booth. How he did that without people seeing him, I don't know. And then, all of a sudden, I'm a karmi, and all of a sudden, put on my devotee, da 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 da, you know. Then I can save people. So it's just like. Anyway, so we have to adjust the external appearance. And, okay. Do you have a question?
I have a question. As you're talking about clothes, would you say that it's actually a good practice to offer your clothes to the Lord before you get
born? Never have offered my dhotis to Krishna. How would you do that?
Oh, Hare Krishna, thanks.
Oh, yeah, thanks. So, yeah, that's fine. I mean, I was picturing putting them on your altar. In the old days, it's interesting, Prabhupada said to the devotees, you offer whatever is best to Krishna, and the devotees sometimes would offer blue jeans to Krishna. Here's your question.
Yes, mine is a bit more... Going back to going to Radhakund and Shyamakund and all of that. The last time I went to Radhakund, you know, I'd given so much, you know,
money.
I had to keep money out, and I'd come to the end and I hadn't any money, and someone wanted a donation, and I didn't have any left with me. And he goes, and it was they were all doing puja and everything.
Yeah.
He goes, no sadhana for you, and it absolutely like flipped me out totally. I was thinking, how am I, you know, have I offended? What do I do here?
No.
So I mean, I was a little concerned, and then I got to the next, someone else asking for money, I said, no. And he goes, you need guru. He goes, I have guru. And he goes, you need guru. You know, you're a fool. Go, you know, he just did a whole thing on me. And I said, well, and then he goes, I said, oh, God, I have guru. And he goes, oh, so who is your guru? And I said, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada. And he goes, oh, and he walked away. And it was just this thing that, you know, that was really sort of like cursed. I felt like I was being cursed, you know, for no sadhana. It was, you just let that go.
No, there's a way to deal. There's a way to deal with situations like that. These are Vrajavasis.
Yeah.
So you don't want to get angry at a Vrajavasi, because that's also an offense. So what I do, and because they don't bother me anymore, because they know me, because I stay a lot in Govardhan, but they will if I take a group around. Then first of all, I make friends with them. But the best way for someone to deal with them is just be humorous about it. Because they're very humorous by nature, the Vrajavasis. I mean, for example, one time I was at Jatipur, which means Madhavendra Puri's city, which means the place of the sannyasi. And it's in the opposite side of Govardhan Hill from Aniyur, which means give me more. So in Jatipur, one of the pandas came up to me and he said, you know, a donation. And I told him, I said, well, you're in the wrong city. This is Jatipur, this is my city. And I take out my club and said, you give me a donation. I said, if you want to ask for a donation, go over to Aniyur. Give me more. But this is a city of sannyasis. And so, you know, I joke with them. I joke with them. I never get angry. I just joke with them, and they love that. They love that. I mean, because they're very sweet people. And the way you look at this is that's how they make a living. I mean, someone sells, in the West, someone sells cars, someone sells electronic stuff, someone sells prasadam. Like here you sell prasadam. So they sell blessings. And you know, they're a little heavy about it sometimes. They'll grab onto your sari and won't let you go until you give them a donation. But I just approach them in a very sweet way, and they appreciate that. And I've never really... If you get angry with them, then you get cursed.
No, I didn't get angry. I just was like, when you said that, I went, oh, what have I done? I was too terrified.
I wouldn't worry, because it's not a serious thing.
Yeah, no.
It's a business plan.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like the way they sell insurance. Unless you buy insurance, what's going to happen to your loved ones when you pass away? They're all going to suffer like hell. So, you know, that's fancy insurance salesman. And one time I was going around with one of my disciples, and he committed an offense. This panda was coming up to me, and he pushed the panda away with a tripod, you know, which is like the foot of a camera stand. And the panda was actually getting ready to curse him. I said, you go down, you touch his feet, and beg for forgiveness. And he said, I don't want to do that. I said, do it. And I forced him to do it. So you have to be careful. Even Lord Chaitanya said to Jagannanda Pandit, just stay in Braj for 2 weeks, basically, because after that you won't understand the residents of Braj. Once you understand them, the relationship is very sweet. It's actually, you know, I enjoy that exchange when they start to, it's like a loving exchange. But you really have to live there and understand them, and then it becomes...
I get that in Mayapur, because I go to Mayapur a lot,
yeah.
So I know how to...
No, Brajavasis are different than the Mayapur Vasis. but they have extremely good senses of humor. They're very, very sweet people, but it's a question of just dealing with them like that, loving way.
Rinnakesh Poole was making the prayers in an indirect, in a wrong direction. These people who say, I worship already the God.
The God, yeah.
And or
the gods.
I love God. They don't do anything in their lives. Is that any way also being indirectly pious or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada said if they understand that something is greater than themselves, that is a first step. Like it's talking about, you know, nature worship, where one actually worships. I mean, I remember... When I was young, I would sleep outside sometimes on a camping trip and look up at the stars and think how great everything is. So that's a first step. And that's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, too. That's a step in God consciousness, to admit that something is better or greater than oneself. And certainly, Lord Brahma, being a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, there's some benefit in him serving Lord Brahma, or praying to Lord Brahma.
I want to share a comment. My mother just had an operation last Thursday, quite a major one, and she's, you know, knows me and my wife and family are practicing Krishna consciousness. She's always been polite and Hare Krishna. She had the realization to come out of the anesthesia in the coming out process. She said she thought of Krishna, and she believes firmly and strongly, 100%, that Krishna brought her through, because the doctor had said 50% you could not come out of this operation.
Wow.
Big chance she could pass away.
Oh my God.
And she thought of Krishna. She said she's pretty sure 100% that Krishna brought her out of the anesthesia. My mother has, by force of the circumstance, practically become Krishna conscious by her circumstance.
That's nice. Yeah, Krishna arranges things for devotee parents. I mean, with my father, before he passed away, he said he understood Krishna arranged for him to be successful in business. So he was thanking Krishna for that and gave major donations to the movement. So, you know, Krishna does make these arrangements. Whatever happens, that was the point I was making before, whatever happens to a devotee and their family is for the best, even if it appears to be something unfortunate. So, any other questions? Yes, Vaishnavi. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he was trying to say that he tried
Well, I can answer that. But you practically answered that yourself indirectly. He said they're taking advantage or whatever of us, but that's not really what's going on with them. Everyone at all times is trying to fulfill their needs, and their strategies may stink, you know. But you know, the people have needs. They have a need for basic human needs. Like we're talking about, you know, a need. We all have a need for love. We have a need for autonomy, a need for interdependence. I mean, I'm not going to go through. We need for food, air, light, shelter, all these other things. And people have different strategies. And that's all people are trying to do. If you see like that, they're not, first of all, they're not dealing with you because they don't even see you. You say someone's trying to take advantage of me, but they don't even know me to take advantage of. Because I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not, you don't see me. See, Parma, you don't see me.
You're right.
Because it's not me. You know, it's not me. So you think like that. They are thinking that something is you and maybe trying to utilize that particular interaction to achieve the fulfillment of their needs. But basically, they don't see you. And so that's one way to look at it. They're not really acting against you. They're trying to fulfill their needs. And then you could think, if I was in their position, how would I be feeling? What would I, you know, you could do a little role playing. You know, put yourself in their shoes. That's one way to be compassionate. You actually, compassionate, empathic, or whatever, is to put yourself in their shoes. You know, how would I act in that situation? Maybe they're under so much stress, you know, whether it's financial or whatever stress. And you understand from their point of view. I mean, even like Haridas Thakur was understanding that from the Muslims' point of view, that were whipping him in 22 marketplaces. He said, you know, what's the problem? And they were under distress because they weren't able to kill Haridas Thakur, and they were going to be tortured by the Nawab. So Haridas Thakur said, all right, I'll make myself unconscious so you're not under stress anymore. So this is how we remain compassionate. But compassion, obviously we have to chant nicely and all these other nice qualities so we can see the inherent equality of all living entities. You know, what do they say? Do unto others, you would have others do unto you. And that comes from spiritual advancement. So compassionate nature is extremely important. But it's not an artificial thing. But we have to develop the point, ultimately, that we're loving all living entities. Like you're talking about the scorpion, it's a very good example. That even you have to love the scorpion, the animal that bites you. Because what is a scorpion trying to do? Why does a scorpion bite you?
To protect himself.
To protect himself. Just trying to fulfill his needs. He's not thinking, you know, I hate this guy or girl. Let me attack them. I mean, animals are like that. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's all they're doing. They're not sitting down and planning that you're going to walk by them that today. It's like you have a nice python that lives here. You seen him? He's not planning, you know, one day Vaishnavi will walk by, she'll be my dinner. He's just hungry. And his food is human beings or whatever, you know, or pigs or whatever they eat. Okay, on that happy note, we should end class now. All glories to his grace. Whoops, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna, everybody. We'd like to welcome B. Krishna Goswami for a few days on the farm because he's feeling a bit unloved by the welcome in ISKCON. So let's have a big hurry ball for B. Krishna Goswami Ki.
Jai.
B. Krishna Goswami Ki.
Jai.
The Swami's family Ki.
Jai.
That's the family, right?
That's funny. Okay. Thank you very much.